Welcome to another episode of the Baraza. It's another week, another episode. We are on episode 6. At the Baraza, we aim to talk about Africa, the African story, and the African experience. I'm your host, Benjamin Walgwe, alongside my co-host, Patrick Wandolo.
Hi, guys.
Yeah. So, Patrick, what's up,
yes,
man?
Yes, Benjamin. I'm good. Getting used to the cold.
Oh, yeah, July. July is approaching. Winter is coming. Winter is coming.
Yeah, the Kenyan winter. All right. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm good. How's your week?
Busy. Really, really busy. Working on a few projects at work, but good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so far so good.
Yeah, you were unwell some time back. Actually, yeah. How's that going for you?
Wow. Would I call it unwell or side effects of the second COVID vaccine jab?
What happened?
Wow, everything happened. Fever, cough, flu, the shakes, stuff getting out of all exits.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, and it took like 3 to 4 days before it subsided. Mm-hmm. But thereafter, pretty much I'm all right, except now my chest is clearing. Mm-hmm. But I have a friend who, interestingly, had allergies, you know, dust and stuff. And once he took the jab, those allergies magically disappeared.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I'm waiting for some surprises. I'm monitoring my body.
Dude, man, you're waiting for some surprises.
I just hope I don't develop boobies or anything funny like that. So yeah, I'm good.
All right, cool, man. Yep. Yeah. I guess. Yeah, mine's been pretty much quiet. No drama, no nothing. You know. Yeah, just how's, the usual.
How's business?
It's okay. You know, it's going. It's okay. You know.
How with the hours?
Yeah. Well, you know, sources, plants. That's what I do. You know.
Anyway, we make do with what we have. Yeah.
100%.
When life gives you lemons, you make lemonade.
100%.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So,
yes.
My week was kind of also, other than that, it was kind of interesting because I came across there's a lady. She's Dr. What's her name? I need it to come back to me. What was her name? Because she really hit home with a bunch of things, especially she was talking about Africa, you know.
Well, it was a podcast, and, YouTube.
Basically, there was a conference going on, and she happened to speak in the conference. And she's actually called Dr. Arikana Chihombori. Have you heard of her?
I'm sorry, no. From which country? Rwanda?
I think one of Central Africa or something like that. But she sounds from the south. I think she's from the southern countries.
Zim or Zimbabwe or
somewhere. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And she has been talking about, you know, the French especially, and the atrocities that they have done in Africa, you know. Especially with the way they make Africa send back, you know, at least 50% of their annual income to France, you know.
Yeah, what they call the colonial tax.
Yeah, and then they actually literally invest this money into the stock market and get the returns. And for the countries to even get their money, they have to get it back in terms of a loan, and they still have to pay interest on the loan.
Back up slightly.
Pardon?
Can you repeat what you just said?
Yeah, so for them, for the African countries, okay?
Yeah.
They have to request for the money. They have to send an official request. And this is their money, right? And
pay.
And then it's given to them in terms of a loan.
Okay? That they pay interest on?
And they still pay interest on the loan.
Oh my God. That's just so ridiculous and tragic and all at the same time.
100%. So when I came across that, right, it got me thinking a bit deeper, because I was like, man, okay, let me try and find out what exactly happened from the inception, you know? Let me go back. Maybe not everybody's bad, you know, but let me just see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever been walking and then you hit your big toe on a stone?
Yes.
that's exactly what happened to me.
That moment of pain.
I wasn't even looking for this kind of stuff, but I was just like, oh man.
Yeah. Heavy, yeah?
Yeah, it's heavy. And I think today
mm-hmm.
I felt that we should just tackle it, you know?
Yes.
We should just tackle it and just go right at it. So today's episode, I thought, should be called Africa's Hidden Sheath.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wow. Great topic.
And the reason I picked that topic is because we want to dive in and figure out what exactly, because we don't really understand what exactly is happening. It's smoke and mirrors, you know? There are things happening, but there are kind of things not happening. There's progress, but there's no progress. So what exactly is happening? And I think we need to dive in from the beginning, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So it would be interesting to know what's holding back Africa. Despite all the steps we try and make, you know, we keep on like making two steps forward and five backwards. So what is this that's holding us back?
Exactly, you know, and what is this hidden sheath, this covering on Africa? What? Because we need to unveil this. We need to unveil it, you know.
Yes.
So I went on a quest, and I was like, okay. And then, of course, we all know that colonialism has been there from time immemorial. It's been there for a long time, you know.
Yes, it is.
And at some point, the West started having conflicts amongst each other, you know, trying to figure out who should get what.
Yeah.
And you have the German Chancellor at that time, Otto von Bismarck, right?
Yes.
Who called the Berlin Conference in 1914.
All right.
And he called most of the countries together, and most of the countries were in attendance. Now, in the meeting, they were basically meeting to discuss how they were going to chop it up in an amicable way. Okay.
Yeah.
And the outcome of that meeting was as follows. They chopped it up basically like this. Mm-hmm. So I'll start with Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them wanted Congo, but that was at the basis of a lot of their conflict, okay, because of the amount of resources in Congo.
Yes, indeed. That's true.
But they didn't get Congo. So Germany got Cameroon, Togo, Gambia, Southwest Africa, and German East Africa. Okay.
Okay.
And then the British. The British. In fact, let me hit the British last. So France got French West Africa, which is a huge chunk. We know that. They got Algeria, Morocco, French Equatorial Guinea, Tunisia, and Madagascar. Okay.
Yes.
The Italians got Somaliland, Eritrea, and Libya. The Portuguese, who again are very notorious, because first of all, they claimed ownership of the world.
Yeah, crazy.
Oh, yeah, crazy. So according to them, Africa was theirs. But guys were like, seriously, guys? No. Stand down for 1 minute. You know.
Yes. Yeah.
So they were pushed. They were pushed down south, and ended up getting Angola, Mozambique, Spanish Guinea.
Yeah,
that's basically what they got. And how and even how they managed to retain those was because they had already put their pedaros. That's the wooden or stone pillars, you know. I think maybe even like Fort Jesus. I think that was like one of the monuments. Wasn't that Portuguese, right?
Yes, the early Portuguese explorers. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, they just stamped their marks in particular places, and they were told, okay, retain those areas. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, let's come to Congo. So in this meeting, okay.
And I'm
assuming maybe they're just chilling, you know, they got their cigars and, you know, caviar and whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, yo. So Leopold is chilling in the corner. You know?
Enter the crazy king, Leopold.
Exactly. Leopold, crazy guy. He checks in chilling in the corner and he's like, guys, just stop for 1 minute. Stop bickering over Congo, okay? And simply just give it to me. And the countries were like, Germany were like, okay. I think the French also had had an interest in Congo. They were like, okay, you know. The British were okay. Belgium can have Congo. But the misconception with the Congolese colonial era, okay?
Yeah.
Is people think that Belgium actually colonized Congo. But that is not so, because in the meeting, Leopold said, no. I don't want Congo as Belgium. I want Congo as Leopold.
Yeah, as my private property.
That dude is crazy. And he was like, yep. I want, and guys were like, what? Okay, cool. So he took Congo as his personal business.
Property, yes.
Yeah, it's like owning a building. This guy owned guys, and it even came with people.
Imagine that. As a bonus.
It came with labor. Oh, man.
It came with free labor.
Imagine. Wow, that guy is something else. But
yeah, it's
anyway,
nuts.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Leopold and how he ended up in Congo. And then you have the British now. The British owned basically Egypt, Anglo-Egyptian Sudan, Uganda, British East Africa, Northern Rhodesia, Southern Rhodesia, Bechuanaland, Nyasaland, Union of South Africa, Nigeria, Gold Coast, Sierra Leone, Swaziland, Basutoland. Okay?
Something they called Mashonaland back
exactly.
in the day.
Exactly. Now, how is that even possible? Oh yeah, not forgetting the Spanish, eh?
And
Spanish Morocco. I think they just had Spanish Morocco. You know?
Yeah, those were the late entrants. In fact, Germany were came in much later and actually got the remnants of the so-called remnants, you know, of the cake. But remember that when the British were checking into South Africa, the Boers were there, the Dutch.
Exactly.
And they were quickly dispatched.
Like you can't believe.
Yeah. You know, the gold, diamonds, they say, and a beautiful coast, zero. You guys take off.
Yep.
Britain jostled their way through.
Yeah. You know?
Just to add,
go ahead. Yeah.
Before we go ahead, there were two countries that were not colonized.
Oh yeah, Liberia and the Empire of Ethiopia.
Yes,
not. Yeah, I guess they managed to rebel.
Yeah, you know, Menelik is my hero. Because Menelik fought off the Italians. The Italians tried to raid Ethiopia. Ethiopia had a huge army. They had the Battle of Adowa.
Yes.
Or I don't know how to pronounce it, Adowa or Adowa.
Yeah.
And the Italians were quickly dispatched and repulsed, and they didn't believe it.
I know.
Yeah, so Ethiopia ended up not being colonized.
Yep.
And you can see to date they have their rich culture, they have their own Amharic language, they have their own calendar, so they've retained much of their identity.
Yes, that is true.
Though, of course, westernization has happened, but at least, you know, they were not completely eroded, completely changed like most other countries that were colonized and took up the colonizers and names. Yeah, and work ethic, like the Francophone countries, there's a certain work ethic that they have that resembles France's work ethic, and you know, wine and romance and fashion.
Wine and romance. Do they really like wine?
The rouge, yes, they do. Imagine, I was in I worked in Rwanda and Burundi, and oh my goodness, the French influence is very heavy.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving ahead, I digress there for a moment.
But I thought in terms of Rwanda and Burundi, I thought that was the Belgians at some point.
I think
Leopold jumped in there.
Belgium and they speak French. Remember?
That's true.
Yeah, so it's there's a lot of French influence in terms of lifestyle.
That's true.
Mm.
Yeah. So then.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, by the way, I would like to like back up Kidogo a bit.
Yeah.
Before the scramble for Africa, contact with Europeans started around 1450s.
Yes, yes.
And 1400s. And at that time, it was very difficult for Europe to come in and colonize Africa. First, they didn't know how to navigate the local terrain.
Yeah.
Secondly, Africa had powerful armies at that time that kept Europeans away for 400 years.
Was it 400 or 700 years? Like the Moors in Spain?
Ah, the Moors who actually civilized the Spaniards, and nobody talks about them and taught them how to shower. Anyway.
Yeah.
I had to let that go. Yeah. And so these guys kept repulsed the Europeans for quite a while until the late 1880s. Whereby, at that point in the late 1880s, Europeans only controlled about 10% of Africa at that time.
Yep.
Yeah. And Africans controlled their trade networks. And, you know, different communities specialize on different wares. You know, so everything was pretty organized before the colonialists came. It's not that Africa did not have systems, and that thing that is coined out, we were savages and they came to civilize us. That is a notion that was just to justify scrambling and exploiting Africa. We were not savages. Yep. We had our own system. Yep. For crying out loud, we built pyramids that to date they cannot replicate.
Yep.
So we are not savages. Astrology, mathematics, you know.
Yep.
So anyway, now going back to the Berlin Conference. Yes, continue. I'm throwing it back at you.
So let's look at what they stood to gain by based on how they chopped it up, right? So we look at the resource allocation, okay? So the first segment that I brought up, we can call it the meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the second part,
mm-hmm.
I will call it resource allocation and the and basically the 21st century land rush. Okay. So based on the territories that I mentioned before, in terms of who got what, right? So based on those allocations, that would mean that the French basically controlled oil, uranium, cotton, coffee, clothing and textiles, iron ore, natural gases, and petroleum products. Okay.
Yeah.
Belgium, of course. Let me not say Belgium. Leopold.
yes. Right.
Leopold basically controlled gold, diamonds, and rubber. Amongst others, of course. There's probably timber and all this other stuff. I'm sure there are more.
Yeah, remembering that, putting in mind that Europe was going through the Industrial Revolution and they needed all these resources to to produce their goods.
Exactly. So Africa is basically the ground zero. So anyway, Germany, you have petroleum, diamonds, gold, petroleum products, and cotton. Okay. Again, I'll leave the British.
To
the Italians. Livestock, oil. Okay. Portuguese, aluminium, oil, diamonds, fish, timber. Okay. The Spanish, you have phosphates, clothing, and textiles. Because you remember they're up there. They're up there, Morocco, Tunisia.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, which are well known for textiles, you know.
Very well, world class.
And I guess today, if you look at Spain, they have very good textile companies.
Indeed. So.
So it's still continued, or it's still continuing. But anyway, so
yes,
we come back to the British. You have oil, gold, diamonds, copper, aluminium, petroleum products, coffee, tea, grains, livestock, tobacco, timber. Okay.
And many more.
And many more. We can even throw in maybe wildlife in there.
Yes. I agree.
You know. So it's crazy, Patrick. It's crazy, you know. So this is what they got. Now, thinking fast forward for 1 minute, right? If you look at it, especially like Belgium, you have a place like Antwerp.
Yeah.
What is Antwerp known for? Diamonds. And they've traded a lot, especially in conflict diamonds, based on the region, you know?
Yeah.
So,
so
it's still there till today.
Yeah.
If you look at the British, oil, copper, aluminium, it's still the same.
Yeah, and if you look back when they came during the scramble, when they came into Africa, of course they found our local leaders or kingdoms, and they would force them to sign treaties. Most of which they did not know the details of, because first of all, probably the ability to read and write in English. Of course, they know how to communicate in their local languages.
Yeah.
But the colonialists took that advantage for them to sign off on their heritage, on their lands, on their, you know, everything. So once they go back and meet and they say, okay, I got this guy's fingerprint or thumbprint on the document, the guy didn't know what he was signing off on.
Oh yeah, they didn't know.
Yeah, and the ones who refused were killed.
Yep.
Like there was a was the king of Katanga. I can't remember his name. He, you know, Katanga is really rich in resources, and I think there's some gold and diamond also. I think that's because Katanga was really fought for, and and the king refused to sign off on mining rights. There was a French colonel, was he a colonel or a captain, who shot him, and took took the resources anyway. So the injustice was extensive, and they had something they were calling during the Berlin Conference. There's something that they discussed, a principle called effective occupation. Whereby anyone, any country amongst them, there were 14 countries that came for that conference, and they said anyone who lays claim of any part of Africa can only lay claim not only by name, but should have established a local administration and some kind of police to keep law and order, and should have raised their flag on that country and established some sort of system to claim that that's their territory. So that would allow them now to benefit economically from whatever territory that they have laid claim on. So in this effective occupation principle was also used to settle disputes amongst these 14 countries that were scrambling for the African cake at that time. So it's interesting to find out, by the way, name the countries, the 14 countries, for you know, our listeners to really find out who was sitting in that room that day. We had Germany, then we had Austria-Hungary, which were then we had Belgium, we had Denmark.
Remember, we had Leopold, not Belgium.
Oh yeah. yes. We had King Leopold, the crazy dude. Then we had Denmark. We had Spain. Interestingly, we had America, United States of America.
Yeah.
We had France, but states we know that didn't come out with a good deal. They barely came out of that meeting with anything.
Probably pissed off.
Yeah,
and the British told them, probably told them, where.
First of chillax.
All, we want to expose you. You're still our colony somehow.
Yeah, you guys, we are still dealing with you guys in your country. You can't talk. Chill where the big boys are talking. You know.
Yeah. So, that's why you have places like Essex in the US.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, so we had France, we had Britain, we had Italy, we had Netherlands, we had Portugal, Russia, Sweden, Norway, and then the Ottoman Empire, which, interestingly. Yeah. So those were the members who sat in that meeting. So we just want to give context so that for our listeners and know who, wherever they are, you know that probably your country participated in one way or another. and you're ripping off the benefits of Africa, and you have gotten to where you are today because of Africa. If you're listening in on the minerals in your mobile phones are from Africa. I just have to rub it in because it's real.
It's right? True story, man.
Yeah. So.
And just to touch on Leopold, you know, Leopold amazes me. Now, Leopold, Leopard was still visible in Algeria. Okay.
Yeah.
Argentina, what? Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, Paraguay,
Mexico
State, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Honduras, Guatemala, Guyana.
You're not serious.
Listen, Texas, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Portugal, no. Philippines, the Guinea Coast, Madagascar, South Africa, Singapore, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, Australia, Fiji, Malaysia, Samoa.
And here we are, we speak of Christopher Columbus. He has nothing on this dude.
No way. Come on now.
Yeah? The only thing he was taking is disease and syphilis back to the Americas. Anyway,
yeah, imagine. So look at the guys who own what, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about the resources. Now, when you look at when you look at petroleum, for example,
mm-hmm.
right? You'll find fast forward, it's the same guys.
Same equation, right? To date.
Same guys.
The top opaque members and who's exploring oil in those countries.
The British have oil, okay.
Mm-hmm.
The French have oil, okay.
Yeah. The BP now, shells and.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, who are the seven sisters in petroleum? You have Exxon, you have Mobil, you have Chevron, you have Gulf, you have Texaco, you have BP and Shell.
Yeah. And that represents the same equation.
Same equation. And these are the biggest players in petroleum who control prices of petroleum today.
Whoa. Let that sink in for a while.
It's crazy.
And yet a country like Nigeria can have petroleum shortages within their country.
Yep. OPEC.
But are independent. Oh, it's a case of the puppet and puppeteer.
Exactly.
And run like a company, so it's like you have proxy owners or silent partners.
you don't even want to start with the companies, but
hornet's nest, huh?
It's obscene. That's what it is. It's obscene.
It's obscene and immoral, right?
It's obscene and immoral, Patrick. It's crazy, you know. And we kind of don't see it because how it's been done.
It's been done meticulously, right?
Hats off, man. This is brilliant. It is brilliant. It's brilliant. Unbelievable.
I can't. What you found?
What'd you say?
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out what you bumped into.
Well, so you can imagine. Let's now talk about because we're on fast forward, right? We've looked at the resources, we looked at everything. Now there's the 21st century land rush, right? Right now. Okay. And this is basically driven. It has different drivers and different actors. Okay.
Uh-huh. Maybe you just for our listeners, just expound on what you mean by the land rush.
There's a huge there's a high rate of land acquisition, okay,
by
the West
of African of land.
African land.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different drivers that go into this. One of them is there's a triple food crisis. triple, there's a fuel crisis and there's a financial crisis, okay? Now, the actors are investors, mainly, you know, you have Asian powers seeking to secure food supply, you know, oil-rich, but land and water poor Gulf states. You have European and North American banks, finances, you know, sovereign funds, trying to respond to the financial crisis. Now, they're layers. It's layered. Eh? If you look at it. So the financial crisis, you're looking at maybe like tech, you know, coming in through fintech companies and stuff like that. But yeah, basically responding to their financial crisis. Now, you have to remember one thing. All of the above is in partnership with African governments and domestic partners. Which is also a problem because they're complacent on our behalf.
You know? Sad because the complacency also has a history because these are puppets. And remember that there are treaties that were signed way back that we are not privy to. A lot of us citizens are not privy to, that we needed to do away with. That we haven't revisited those colonial treaties that were done under duress.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, how do you look at the Maasai? How do you come from owning thousands and thousands of acres? The whole of Nairobi, for example, was Maasai land. You know that.
Exactly.
To be in a wanderer.
It's injustice. It's sad. It's the greatest injustice because before, you know, the scramble for Africa began, everyone was okay because we had structure.
Yeah.
Let no one lie to people that we were savages and we were completely disorganized. Let me just take that again. We had our own forms of government and administration that worked.
Yeah.
And ours was for the greater good.
Yeah, that brings to mind the reason why.
Sorry, Patrick. Yeah. I lost you there.
I'll just take that again. Connection issues. It brings to mind the reason why, you know, I'm just thinking aloud. It could be that, you know, barter trade was used by Africans, not because we couldn't use other methods, but we were not, we didn't have the capitalistic kind of mindset, but it was the greater good, whereby I only will take what I need and no more.
Yeah.
You have salt and I need whatever, sugar, we trade. It wasn't about getting rich and amassing and, you know, this capitalistic economy that we have adopted and amassing, everyone's hungry to get more and more while others are starving. It was for the greater good. Everyone is okay. Everyone can eat. We're good. So that competition is not there. All we wanted to do is everyone is good, fine. We used to put on our blings, paint our faces and look good, do our hair.
I know, right?
We're good. We're eating fresh food.
Have you seen the tribe? There's a tribe in Namibia who use red ochre
for their hair,
similar to the Maasai, but for the hair. Have you seen that?
Yeah. I've forgotten their name, and they do it to date.
Exactly, crazy.
I've forgotten. Yeah, and you know, people they used to do this, and you know, these soils were also mixing it with cow dung. These were mosquito repellents, by the way. You know. And
Are you serious? Mosquito repellent?
Yes, a lot of these mixtures they used to, you know, rub on their bodies was to repel mosquitoes. Or like, let's say, there was something that they used to do with cow urine that also used to repel insects.
No wonder those white guys were wondering, these guys are not dying from malaria, man. These guys are just,
no,
and they're walking naked.
Yeah, all they do is that they take these things to their labs and make something synthetic. We used to use, all the herbs were in Africa. I mean, vast. We, yeah, you know, medication and stuff. And all they'll do, they'll take those plants,
yeah,
and go and study them and extract the chemicals and make synthetic versions of that and repackage them and sell it to us.
Wow.
You see, because we used to do all these things. We had all these things prior to them coming to Africa. So that notion of us being savages, no. In fact, they are the savages for coming to kill us and take us back as slaves. That's savage.
True.
That's savage.
That's
and forcing
true.
Them to take up their names.
That's true.
And speak their language.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say, but that's the way it is in my perception.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, going back, you were talking, yeah, about the land rush and
the land rush. Yeah. So,
and yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, there was a recent study by FAO, Food and, yeah, Agriculture Organization of the United Nations.
Yeah.
Disclaimer, United Nations is mostly funded by America.
Yeah.
This FAO documented the purchase of 2.5 million hectares by foreign investors in five African countries.
Ho ho.
Now,
yeah, we're going the same direction.
Yeah, the new entrant into the market, one of the emerging tigers, China purchased 100,000 hectares in Zimbabwe.
Yep.
Which is part of a series of investments that has led to more than a million Chinese farmers in Africa.
Yep.
Another emerging tiger, Indian companies purchased hundreds of thousands of hectares in Africa. That was reported by the Hindustan Times newspaper, which is the government paper, which was urging Indian firms to buy land in South America also, apart from Africa. Yeah?
Yeah.
South Korea, which is hush-hush. Imagine, have you heard? Imagine a country that has been on the background for such a while. South Korea secured 690,000 hectares in Sudan.
Yep.
Saudi Arabia purchased
you said South Korea purchased how many? Sudan?
690,000 hectares in Sudan.
It's actually 1.7 million acres, and they're doing wheat.
Oh, my. Oh, okay. That's maybe my statistics a bit later. I mean, earlier. Saudi Arabia, about 500,000 acres in Tanzania. And Kuwait also recently purchased about 200 hectares. But not in Cambodia. And then
China, 7 million acres in Congo to produce biofuel. Mozambique, they have 5.1 million investment in rice production. Tanzania,
and Qatar,
they have 741 acres. Zambia,
oh 4.9 my God.
Million acres they have requested for biofuel.
This is just tiring. It's completely tiring.
The U.S., and, Sudan, 1 million acres. God knows what they want to do with it. You know, Saudi
There's
Arabia,
something.
2.7 billion acres leased for food.
And in Kenya?
With 60% of that, basically Saudi government funded 60% of that 2.7 billion, you know, leasing. Okay?
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
India in Ethiopia, they've invested 54 billion to produce flowers and biofuels.
So, you know, this is so sad, thinking that also Qatar leased 20,000 hectares in Kenya. But are you looking at now the
But now, listen. Listen,
yeah.
In exchange, the Qataris in exchange for funding, and I think I think they funded the port project.
Was it Qatar? I thought.
Yeah.
Oh, they funded, but the Chinese are the ones who did it. A Chinese company is the one that constructed it, right? If I'm not wrong.
I think so.
Okay, but they provided the funding.
Yeah. So listen to this. Basically, worldwide, up to 115 million acres of farmland has been leased, majority of which is in Africa, mainly for food security and biofuels.
But not for food security. Disclaimer. As we are leasing our most fertile land to...
We are starving.
We are starving because now we don't have a land...
We're starving like Marvin, man.
Yeah, and remember, these people are now drawing our natural resources so cheaply. So it's a different mechanism that they're using from the scramble of Africa, because now they're planting their own food, or they're planting their own flowers and exporting it. So what value is it to the Kenyan? Because the only value that we have is what we're getting for the leased land, but we are not getting value for exporting our produce.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 20 times or 100 times more value.
Yep.
So it's just another way of exploiting African resources. It's so sad.
It's sad.
And you see, these are...
It's obscene.
And unfortunately, our governments are sitting there and signing these deals and treaties just because probably you're going to get funding here and there.
Or just simply money direct, or you'll be given a chunk of the proceeds and you're told, hush, hush.
Hush, hush, and we will definitely make sure you keep sitting on the throne and you remain president. And if anyone tries, an opposition leader comes and will back you up, we'll throw in propaganda
Patrick, you have no idea. I think this conversation, I think we need a part two of this conversation.
Yes, it's huge.
We need a part two, because we're going to get into the crime and we're going to uncover, we're going to peel this onion, man. You know? We're going to peel back this onion. So back to the land.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So between 2006 and 2009, you know, mm-hmm. most of Africa was selling land, you know, and players like the UK, mm-hmm. Germany, China, South mm-hmm. Korea, Japan, the same guys we've mentioned in terms of purchasing, India, Sweden, you know, they were purchasing, you know, colossal amounts of land, you know.
Because now
that's when you see like the transfer of nearly 4 million hectares of land to foreign, in Sudan alone, to foreign investors between 2004 to 2013. And this is based on a World Bank report. This is not me saying, you know, mainly for food crops again and biofuels, you know. So,
And
then you have, it also affected Sudan, now Northern Sudan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and it's crazy because after the conflict, South Sudan has got most of the oil fields, right? South Sudan.
Yes, South Sudan. Correct.
Northern lost, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So here comes the economics of it. So split this, guys, and you'll see in Sudan there's a lot of the players that we're talking about who have jumped in to acquire. Now, not only are they oil rich, they're also land rich, okay? And they are a very young country.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes,
indeed. which can be taken advantage of because they're trying to also develop, okay? So who better to help you develop than the West with their huge companies, right? So anyway, so North Sudan, what happens to them? They lose a chunk of their oil fields, and they're forced to start, you know, selling vast acres of land to foreign investors. You have Congo again. Since 2010, 200,000 hectares. They struck a deal with Agri-SA. This was some negotiations for land, you know, acquisitions with the governments of 22 African countries. And this is a 30-year concession. Now, that means even Africans have seen there's a gap in Congo. Let's jump in, man.
Congo is a gold mine on its own.
Gold mine, man. And this guy is losing.
Look at it this way. You know, like, I look at all these economic summits that we have and African leaders are called in.
Yeah.
And just on hindsight, I look at it and you look at how most of the African leaders got into power and who's behind them, and you'll find a Western country. And so these guys are literally puppets who are being sat down and being given.
Probably that's why Macron was. That guy was just like, seriously, we didn't know this stuff.
Yeah, he's been raping 14 countries, you know. And these guys are there and they're being told, you know, we are the guys who put you there. We are the guys who make sure that you stay on where you are. We finance you. So if you do not sign these treaties, we need this and this and this. Then, we can easily support that opposition guy who's always agitating you.
The funniest thing I came across, there was some guys, there was, I think back in the day, there was an issue in Gambia, Gambia. And there were some young guys on holiday from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And when they heard there was an issue in Gambia, they bought arms and they were rushing to Gambia.
They were
passing through Zimbabwe, and at that time Mugabe was wondering, what are young guys like this crossing, you know, with my arms land. What is happening with arms? What's, where are they going? So when he realized what was happening, these guys, they boarded their flight, they were arrested. And you can imagine, and this is the same thing Dr. Ikana was talking about. If you listen to her, she described the same thing. And they were arrested, you know. And had they gotten to their destination, it would be another story of those savages, those this, those that.
Yeah, they're always fighting and, you know, killing one another, poverty and hunger. They're buying off our fertile lands and they've been exploiting us from time immemorial, from the 1880s.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And there you are calling us savages.
Yep.
That if, as such, if we're savages, then why are you in Africa?
100%.
Why are you in Africa?
Yep.
Why are your companies, why are you signing trade agreements with Africa?
Yep.
Why are you coming to study our medicine, our astrology, our architecture?
Yep.
Why did you come to take our ivory?
And there's not even much they're doing with the ivory, at least even the others. They're just making
trinkets and luxury
items.
Yeah, you know, handles for guns
and stuff like that, and selling them at colossal amounts of money.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, those are dead animals, man.
Yeah, it's only the, you know, the Chinese who are perverts and are always trying to eat everything to get their mojos on. I don't know what's up with that. Everything, literally, they're 24/7, they're trying to stimulate themselves. I don't know what's up with that. Rhino horn, whatever, octopus, stimulant, you know, it gets you horny. I don't know what kind of level of horny the Chinese, the Asians want to achieve. It's weird, my brother. Everything, there's a connection towards sexual stimulation. It's nuts.
Oh, my life.
Snake venom.
Snake venom.
I don't know. These guys are just weird. There's nothing they don't eat.
Dude, you crack me up, man. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And we can't just let the gentle animals alone because they are horny. it's crazy.
These guys, I'll tell you, crazy. They're like popcorn. You drop one.
Oh my goodness.
You turn like this. They're like 50.
Small, small little things everywhere.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, anyway, sorry, but it's sad what we're doing, because now we are selling off our birthright.
Oh yeah.
And our governments are standing by and watching, whereby they should have learned from the experience of the West in terms of industrial revolution and what actually drove it.
Yeah.
To learn from that and put it in place and not make the same mistakes that the West made in some areas, but to realize that they have actually, in fact, industrial revolution was fueled by Africa. So if we actually focus on value addition in Africa and not selling our birthright and producing enough food because we have fertile land, and that's why they're coming here to buy our land, we wouldn't need them. We wouldn't need them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the world still condones the colonial tax, such things. And we have all these institutions that, the United Nations that say they are for human rights and all that. But this here is an injustice from time immemorial that they don't want to discuss or face.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of hypocrisy in all of this, and then they use the media also to create a certain perspective or perception of Africa, that Africa needs saving, but yet they know exactly the potential of Africa, because if we were allowed to achieve our true potential, where would that leave them? Let's say Africa didn't exist.
Yeah.
Would they have attained the level of development that they have attained today if Africa didn't exist?
No, they wouldn't.
They wouldn't, you know?
Yeah.
So those are the things that really perturb me when I look at this whole picture, you know, and France trying to justify why we have to pay a colonial tax because we need to reimburse them for the infrastructure they put in Africa. What nonsense is that?
Dude, the agreement even states that the countries can only use, can only even buy like military equipment from France. They can only have joint, you know, military whatever's with France. They can only...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I mean, how do you think the person who's agreed to this knew exactly what he was getting into?
Nah, I don't think so.
Because these things were being done under the US, you get?
I don't think so, you know.
So, yeah, let me just enumerate, because this colonial pact is really immoral. One, the obligation that France subjected its former French colonies under the colonial pact is, one, paying for the infrastructure France built during colonization. Keeping 50% of their foreign reserves in the French treasury. That is for 14 African countries. And of course you need to pay interest on whatever you need in terms of a loan. It's just crazy, your own money. And France had the first right to purchase any natural resources discovered within their...
Oh, yeah.
What? My God! What? Huh? What? French companies have dibs on all government procurement bids.
Imagine.
Like, senior military officers are trained in France.
Yep.
So that France, of course, knows all their strategies because it's theirs. Oh my goodness, immoral. France, it's just nonsense. You know, France has the right to deploy its military in those countries.
Yep. As they please.
As they please.
Yeah.
Countries have to make French the official language and education language.
Oui, oui.
Merci beaucoup, monsieur.
Yep.
using the French colonial currency was a must. Former colonies have to send a reserve report to. How do I? What am I sending a reserve report to France for? This is nuts. Ex-colonies cannot enter into military alliances with other countries without approval from France.
Yep. And please note that it stands till today. We're in 2021. Those agreements, those pacts stand.
Now the last
that's why the ECOWAS region are so pissed. They're like, we are done, man. We are done.
This can go on. This is just immoral. And then the icing on the cake, the former colonies are required to join forces with France during war or global crisis. What nonsense.
Now come die for us on top of that. I'm telling you, it's crazy, but it's crazy. You know?
No, this is
so, man, you know what? Because we are pressed for time. We have to do an episode two.
A part two. I demand for it.
100%. So then we're even going to go deeper, you know.
Wow.
And just to give you a heads up, guys. Yeah. Part two.
Mm-hmm.
What should we call it? I think. I'll call it Unmasking the Truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Unmasking the Truth.
Yeah, that's Unmasking the Truth is good.
Yeah, so part two is going to be called Unmasking the Truth. So, Pat, excellent. any last word for part one?
Well, I don't think I have much to say because we've spoken about, you know, so much that My head is kind of spinning, but I can say that we are living. Africa is actually, it's like we're in opera, and we're acting out. That's what it is.
Yeah.
We're still in the situation of the puppet and the puppeteer.
Yep.
And. We need revolutionary leadership in Africa, visionary. But first, when we talk about visionary leadership, we need a leadership that is emancipated from mental slavery.
Like Bob Marley. We have like the you know the Honorable Addo Ghana.
Yeah, not just educated, not just foreign educated or whatever, like, you know, is a fad. No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between wisdom and education
people who also see the future of what Africa needs to be.
Yeah. And this leadership has to be aware of what happened in the past.
Yep.
To be able to move to the future. To be able to resolve most of these injustices, to relook all the treaties that we signed. We don't have to abide by them.
No, we don't.
Yeah. So we relook all the treaties that were signed from way back.
Yeah.
And say, no, this doesn't make sense. We're not going to be party to this. Yes, of course, we'll be threatened, but I would rather we have a period of a bit of pain but now create a brighter future for generations to come. Because otherwise, our hands are tied and we will not develop. That development, the mirage, will just be getting a foreign education with foreign ideologies working for foreign masters.
100%.
But thinking that we are successful with...
Yep.
Capitalism gives you that smokescreen of success.
100%.
And the selfishness, because it's all about you, but not the greater good, not, you know, the next person.
100%.
So, So we really have to rethink everything. But I can't wait for the second part of this episode.
I know you're itching, man.
Oh, my
God. Dude, you've cracked me up. Oh, my God, you've killed
me. Yeah. You know those dudes of ours. You know, they're always looking for the next stimulant. Anyways.
Anyway.
It's been real?
Yeah.
Yeah, Benjamin, go ahead and close. It's been real.
All right, cool. Hey, guys, man. You know, thanks for joining us this week on the Baraza.
Yeah.
It's been an amazing topic. Hilarious. You know, you can catch all our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or via RSS, so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show or the episode, you know, we'd appreciate a rating, or if you'd simply tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend about the show, that is. That would help us a lot. Be sure to tune in next week for part 2 of Africa's Hidden Sheath. Now, as usual, I leave you with a proverb this time. It's an African proverb, and it goes by, and this is what it says. The strength of the crocodile is in the water. So my question is, what is Africa's strength? Have a great week.